Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peake, and welcome to episode 214 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, what she's been doing to herself. We're talking drugs and alcohol here. Yeah, you heard that. Maybe even you out there. All right, now hold on. Before we begin this episode, just know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. Now, I sit here twiddling my thumbs, waiting to hear from you, and your feedback is, in my view, priceless. Plus, I love to hear from you. So please, this is your first reminder. I'll give you another one after the episode. Wanna hear from ya? All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
You know, we've been reading headlines all the time, every single flipping day, about how women, especially, are binge drinking at all ages. And surprisingly, some of the biggest ones are taking place after the age of 50, that women are really abusing alcohol. What's that about? As well as when we say drugs, it could be anything. Little pill popping, right? Mother's helpers. And then what's also even more disturbing is they're doing both. Now, the thing is, what's that doing to you? Especially one of the most important organs in your body, and that's your heart. I can't think of anyone else better to speak to this than Dr. Jennifer Haith, who is assistant professor of medicine at Columbia University Medical Center, co-director for the Women's Center for Cardiovascular Health, director of the Adult Pulmonary Hypertension Center, and director of Cardiac Obstetric Service. I'm just exhausted, you know, like going down that whole laundry list, Jennifer. Good grief. You're a busy one. And welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, you know, I read these headlines daily and it just makes me break out into, you know, a cold sweat. I'm an internist, but also an intensivist. And you and I both know that when women are doing this to their bodies at any age, but especially as they get older, there are some really serious consequences here. First, Are you surprised that women are now doing more drugs and ingesting more alcohol?
So, you know, I'm never surprised. I feel like this is what happens when you've been in medicine for a long time. I'm not surprised. I think that women are under a lot of stress. I think that women are working full-time jobs and taking care of their kids. And I think that with that and with genetic predisposition and, you know, other risk factors, it's not surprising that women have the same or, you know, equal rates of, you know, alcoholism and drug use as men now. And but I do think that it's something we need to address the same way we have to address the fact that heart disease is the number one, you know, killer for women as well as men. And it's one of these things that nobody wants to talk about because for some reason when it comes to women, it seems more taboo.
All right. So women, you and I hear this all the time. They're terrified of breast cancer, right? And and they oftentimes, you know, it's obviously involves the C word, in this case, not cardiovascular, but cancer. And they, once again, need reminding that that's not the number one cause of death among women.
That's right.
It's actually cardiovascular.
That's correct.
Disease.
It's cardiovascular.
So what do you say
more
to
than
women?
All cancers combined, by the way.
More than all cancers combined, right?
Correct.
And I think women minimize it big time, and they're more concerned with their husband's heart or their partner's heart than they are themselves. And I hear that all the time. I have women who actually will, you know, quote me, you know, cite and verse exactly what's going on with, you know, some male in their life, whether it's a brother, the guy next door, or their partner, whomever. But if you ask them their own HDL, they give you that little glazed look, like, okay, whatever.
Totally.
So let's go to this place. Is red wine, alcohol, or just alcohol in general, what does that do for your heart? There's so much confusion out there about, you know, whether or not a woman should be consuming wine or alcohol at all. A lot of this breast cancer stuff going on, as you know, et cetera. So help us kind of parse through all of that confusion.
Okay, so it is confusing, and I think we see different headlines all the time about it. And I think that what happened is that back in the, I think it was in the 80s, there was some study called the French Paradox, where people didn't understand why the French, who eat a lot of cheese and cream sauces and drink red wine, were not having the same rates of cardiovascular disease as Americans. And so out of that came this idea, well, oh, they drink red wine must be good for their heart. And so a lot of people then tried to look into what is it in red wine that might be good for your heart. And there really actually hasn't been any legitimate study in humans that has shown that red wine is beneficial to your health. There are studies that show that the Mediterranean diet, which is based on a plant-based, you know, fish, legumes, fruits and nuts and olive oil, low-fried food, no red meat, and a glass of red wine here and there, those people seem to do better from a cardiovascular perspective than people who eat our diet, which is filled with fried food, processed food, sugar, and things like that. So whether it's the red wine or whether it's the whole diet is also not really known. So, you know, and then people said, well, you know, people in Japan have lower risks of cardiovascular disease, but they don't drink a lot of red wine. They drink more like beer and clear liquors. So then they said, well, is it just the alcohol that's different? But then their diet is also very different, much less, much more fish-based. And so nobody knows for sure. But what we do know is that in moderation, which for a woman is one drink a day, that that's probably safe and it's not going to do anything bad to your heart. But what we also know is that heavy alcohol use in anyone, women and men, can cause a heart failure syndrome. And it is a direct toxin to the heart. So there's no scenario where I'm telling my patients that drinking is good for them or good for their heart. I tell them that if they have one glass of whatever a day, that's fine, although I'd rather them only do it three times a week. But realistically, I know that it may be more, but I don't ever tell them that it's good for them. I tell them that they can probably get away with it being okay.
All right. Now, I had a woman just ask me just the other day. She says, but Dr. Peek, there's resveratrol in red wine.
Right.
So isn't that good for you? I read all kinds of things about this on Dr. Google.
Yes. Yeah. So that is potentially, you know, good, maybe quote, good for your heart, studied in mice, but you would have to drink something like, you know, 100 drinks a night to get the amount of resveratrol that was in, you know, that was given to mice that they tolerated and wasn't bad for their heart or may have been better for their heart. So I don't think that that's really been proven to be true either.
All right. So
in humans,
you know,
well,
I think that whole issue of the supplement itself, too, is still way up in the air, too. I'm not, you know, thoroughly convinced that popping 900 pills is going to get us much of anywhere, mostly because, I mean, basically, we just have one huge uncontrolled mess of a trial going on out there. And so who knows what you're really getting here. So, you know, and then women are saying, oh, come on, you know, on a Friday night, loosening up with the girls, can I have a Cosmo?
You know, I say yes. I'm like a person who believes in moderation, and I think that that's very unappealing. We've talked about this before on your show. I think about how people in our culture, it's very extremist. So, you know, they go on fat diets. There's something about, you know, stick to a diet of moderation and drinking one glass here or there that's very unappealing. Everything is so intense in our culture. So, you know, I think that if you can do that and you can have a Friday night Cosmo, that's great. But the problem is when you start drinking more heavily, and then that's not good for your heart health, and it isn't good for your muscle of your heart, and it's not good for your brain, and it's not good for your nerves and your legs, and it causes real problems. I mean, we know many horrible side effects of alcoholism, and the problem is that it can be a slippery slope where you go from one drink here or there to one drink every night to two drinks every night to splitting a bottle of wine every night, you know, and before you know it, you're drinking a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And then let's go to the wonderful world of drugs, right? Because, you know, we're really talking about alcohol and drugs, all right? So one of the things you and I are probably, you know, rolling our eyes at and, you know, patting our foreheads with Kleenex as the sweat begins to pour down is that whole issue of what's happening with cannabis right now. In its 900 different forms, none of which is controlled. So we have no idea what's going on out there. So we have that. And a lot of people are seeing that there's a green light. It must be good. You know, I'm laughing because I've spent many years at the NIH here. And one of my neighbors is the director of the National Institute of Drug Abuse. And, you know, she, if you think you and I break out in the sweats, I mean, she has seizures when she thinks about this because there's been so little, you know, true, excellent work done on what cannabis is really doing to our brain, let alone what happens in the forming brain, i.e. teenagers and the rest of it. So we've got that. Mm-hmm. And then we also have, you know, I'm just so stressed out. Where's that Xanax again? Anything in the benzodiazepines. So how do you, you know, how do you actually sit down with a woman and talk to her about this? Because sometimes women may not be forthcoming. Like, here's my laundry list of all the fun things I do in the Valley of the Dolls. How do you do this?
Well, you know, I sometimes, you know, it can be hard to talk to people about cannabis and marijuana use because I think there's a lot of very strong feelings about the effects of cannabis, and people have very fixed beliefs that it's very beneficial for many things. And so I don't want to argue with them about that. So what I try to do is explain to them the cardiovascular effects. So I explain to them that, you know, people who are known to have heart disease are more likely to develop chest pain more quickly if they smoke marijuana, that it can increase their heart rate, dilate their blood vessels, make their heart pump harder, and that, you know, some research shows that the risk of having a heart attack is actually higher in the hour after smoking marijuana than it normally would be. So is the risk of atrial fibrillation, which is an arrhythmia or ischemic stroke. So there is evidence to support these things. And then, of course, there are people who say, well, I have terrible back pain and this is the only thing that works. And people have to make their own decisions. I can only explain to them what I think they should worry about and what the risks are. And so that's sort of how I steer the conversation in terms of marijuana. And certainly anything that you're smoking is going to have carcinogens in it. I mean, I know that now there's edibles and vaporizers and all kinds of other ways of ingesting cannabis and marijuana, but I just try to make sure that they know all the information before they make their choices to do that. In terms
of
the benzos,
you brought up the whole issue of smoking things. What about tobacco and Juuls and vaping and all of that? And people say, well, it can't be that bad. It's certainly not one of those nasty cigarettes.
Right. I actually tell my patients that I think it's all bad. And I think the scary part is that we don't have a lot of long-term data on vaping and vaporizers and Juuling. So we don't really know what it's going to lead to. It's different than smoking, but I don't know that it's necessarily better than smoking. And it's highly addictive as well. There's actually probably, I think, higher nicotine levels in Juuls and vapes than in regular cigarettes. So yeah, it doesn't smell bad. The only thing is now you can't know if your child is doing it because it doesn't smell. So it's sort of more furtive and secretive. If it's going to help you quit tobacco, you know, maybe if you can then get off that, you know, I don't know that we know enough about it. So that's what I feel a little bit frightened of when it comes to the Juuls and the vapes. But in general, all of it is terrible. Anything that people can do to stop would be best for their health. Obviously, we know that smoking is a huge risk factor for heart disease, more in women than in men. It's a bigger risk factor for women. you know, besides all of the pulmonary effects of lung cancer and emphysema and wheezing, you know, that is always in my conversation. Although I have to say, I have found that fewer of my patients smoke cigarettes now. I would almost say that I hear more about marijuana use than about cigarette smoking, which is interesting.
Yeah, I was just about ready to ask you that. You know, mm-hmm. I'm seeing sort of a transition now, sort of a transformation. Mm-hmm. People are now going to a different place. But backing up for a second, what does tobacco do to the heart?
So nicotine, which is found, you know, in cigarette smoking, is actually probably not that bad for you in and of itself. You know, there's evidence that it's an antidepressant. You know, it probably increases your blood pressure a little bit, which isn't good for people, might increase your heart rate. But smoking and all of the carcinogens that are in the tobacco as well that are put into cigarettes to make it addictive and as filler, we know that those things cause cancer, that they cause permanent genetic defects and mutations in your lungs. And in terms of your heart, we know it increases your heart rate, it increases your blood pressure, causes atherosclerosis to build up, increases your risk of stroke, causes vasoconstriction, which means the blood vessels tighten. So, and it's bad for your heart. You know, anything that's going to cause, and it causes peripheral arterial disease. So anything that, you know, narrows the major arteries to your brain and your heart and increases the risk of stroke and heart attack, you know, through those mechanisms is not good for your heart.
All right. So you heard it from Dr. Haith, for crying out loud. You know, every time I see a woman light up, I want to go over to her and very gently break all of her fingers. I know. It's a little aggressive and probably violent and will get me jailed at some point in my life. But God, it just kills me. You know, it really does. It's like, girlfriend, have you not read anything? I mean, do you feel the same way?
I do. You know, I feel like there's so much addiction, though, which is untreated. And I think mental illness that's untreated. And I think a lot of smoking may be treating underlying mental illness that doesn't have to be severe mental illness, but can be depression and anxiety. So I would rather people go and try to be treated for those things than to smoke. You know, and the thing about smoking is that, and heart disease for many people in general, is that it's something that takes many years to develop. And so it's very easy to get this sort of cognitive dissonance where you're just disconnected from it because you're like, that's not going to happen to me until I'm 60. And then all of a sudden you're 55 and you've been eating fatty food and smoking and have high blood pressure for 40 years. And there you are. So the one thing, though, that I do want to mention also is I think that there's a rise in cocaine use recently as well. And, you know, cocaine is the thing for your heart that can cause damage instantly. It's not something that takes years and years. You could do cocaine once and have a massive heart attack. And so that's another.
Okay, can you explain to everybody out there what's that about? I mean, how does that happen so that our listeners understand?
Right. And also, I just want people to know that it can happen the first time you use cocaine, and it can happen 150th time you do cocaine. So you're never really safe, or you're never safe. And what happens is that cocaine is a vasoconstrictor, as I just mentioned, which means that it tightens the arteries and it can cause spasm. And so unlike a traditional heart attack where you may have a plaque in one of your arteries that you've had for a while and that plaque ruptures and all the little blood cells go there to stop the plaque from rupturing and then it causes a clot and blocks the artery. With cocaine use, what happens is that your artery spasms, and it's so spasm that it literally closes completely and blood can't get to the rest of your heart. And so I see patients who have used cocaine once that have massive heart attacks that could kill them or can lead to a chronic heart failure syndrome. And this can happen also with chronic use of cocaine. You could have vasospasm that's sort of more chronic, and over time you have death of chronic heart failure syndrome. So it kills me to see, you know, a 35-year-old, 40-year-old woman who went out, or 25, and did cocaine with her friend, thinking it was fun and cool, and then comes in with a massive heart attack and needs a heart transplant because her heart is dead from that one night. And so I just don't think people know that. I don't think they understand that that can happen.
I think that everyone out there in the Herb podcast land needs to be taking big-time notes and get the word out. Because there's no question mm-hmm. about it that this is not, you know, insignificant. This isn't one of those, ha-ha, we're just hanging out and having a good time things. You know, I remember also mm-hmm. A young woman who was an athlete who decided to do a little cocaine before she actually went out and she's a basketball player and do her thing. and during a practice. And son of a gun, right there in the middle of the court, dead. And they
right.
found
well, that's the other thing.
It
can cause arrhythmias, which is another thing that can lead to death. So, yeah, that's
that's why I brought it up.
It's
exactly right. And so, you know, you're tinkering with death, not illness necessarily, death. I mean, this is a big this is a big deal. And I'm really, you know, I think you said it so beautifully when you said, you know, really, at the end of the day, we're self-medicating for other purposes. Right. Life gets tough and you want to numb out. And maybe you've got some underlying depression, anxiety. You know, women, after all, are much more likely to have generalized anxiety disorder than men by a factor of almost 20 to 1. So, you know, I mean, you know, we don't worry, as I always say, we pre-worry. We worry about not worrying enough. we just make the whole damn thing complicated. And really, at the end of the day, what I'm trying to say to everyone, for crying out loud, get to the root of the problem. This is why I'm a nutcase about really making sure people get the support and the help they need to be able to address, you know, the original problems. You know, it's never just one thing. Having trouble with stress. I mean, how about stress management? And I am a crazy person about any form of self-reflection, introspection, or if you want to call it meditation, rock on, but whatever. When people come to you with trouble managing their alcohol, tobacco, or drug intake, what do you say is the first step in finding help?
Right. Well, I first sort of try to find out more about how long they've done it, how much they're doing. And then depending on the substance, you know, I'll really try to work with them. So people who, and I'll refer them to experts if I feel like they need that help. So for instance, people who smoke, we talk a lot about smoking cessation. We talk about options for smoking cessation. I've had people successfully quit. I really try to have an honest conversation that I'm worried about them, that they're going to die. And I don't think that maybe they've actually had that conversation with anybody before, and that, you know, their smoking has become pretty commonplace to their friends and family. Not that their friends and family don't worry, but it's just sort of taken like as fact. And so I think that if someone really pays attention and says, you know, there, you can do this, and I offer them books that I've heard work, or I offer them the nicotine patch, or I offer them Chantix, or, you know, or do they want to try on their own and tell me when they come back? And so that we'll talk about for smoking. For marijuana, you know, I'll tell people, depending on why they're using it, people who tell me that they use it to relax, I tell them, you know, we use marijuana in rats and mice to induce anxiety. So there's a reason why people feel paranoid and weird when they use marijuana, and that's because it's actually it creates anxiety. It's used to create anxiety in animal studies. And so it's not actually relaxing them probably all that much. It may make them feel high, but feeling high does not necessarily mean you're relaxed. So we talk a little bit about that. We talk about whether they could try something else, like maybe CBD oil drops or something that's a little less potent, not smoking it. Alcohol abuse, I usually refer to a specialist. Alcohol withdrawal is one of the few, you know, withdrawal syndromes that can kill someone. It really can cause severe autonomic or blood pressure and heart rate instability and needs to be monitored in a medical setting. The same, you know, I refer people who have more serious addiction to, you know, addiction centers or methadone centers or things like that. But in general, I just try to talk to people about why they're using what they're using and try to help them understand what it might like. Try going for a walk instead, you know, try exercising to relieve your stress.
Yeah, you know, it's like even our addiction centers have their own flaws. You know, it's that 28-day myth. That it's all going to be cool after the 28th day. That was a great movie with Sandra Bullock.
That's a good movie.
And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, people are trying to find a soft landing off all of this. I think when it comes to the cigarette smoke, you know, I've heard now that, you know, when I really encourage someone to get off cigarettes, they'll say, well, then I guess I could just do the Juul. Isn't that the best way to do it? What do you say when someone asks you that?
I never know what the right answer is there because I just don't feel like we have a lot of information. I mean, I think I would rather that they Juul, because maybe Juul is just nicotine and water or whatever oil is in there and that it doesn't smell. And but like, again, all of our studies have been in tobacco. We haven't looked at the effects of juuling and vaping on the kidneys and on their blood pressure. And, you know, there's so much. It's like a whole new system. You know, we can't really lump them together as the same or totally different. So I think we just don't know. So I tell people, you know, if you think that's going to help you quit, but if you find yourself just juuling all the time, then I think we need to talk about another step there.
Yeah. Okay. So really, at the end of the day, what you're really trying to do is, first of all, get them to acknowledge the fact that there's an issue here. A lot of people don't.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of women just blow it off and they just say, you know, I'll get over it. You know, it's a rough time right now. But, you know, when you're looking at your patients, is there a particular age bracket that you're most concerned about?
Yeah, I mean, I find that, again, I don't have that many smokers. I have some, but not that many. And they're usually people in their, you know, 40s and 50s, because I find that the people in their 60s and 70s have already quit, you know, and there's not as many 20 and 30-year-olds that are smoking in this generation. I do find that there seems to be a big drop. Even, you know, when I go out with people I knew who smoked a lot, when we were younger and everybody has quit smoking, you know, some people are juuling and, but less smoking, but I find that the marijuana and the, you know, benzos and the alcohol, that really seems to be heavy. I would say in the sort of 35 to 65 and up, you know, I think that there's a big range. I think young people drink a lot, older people drink a lot. You know, I worry when people are mixing different substances together. You know, you brought up benzos and Mother's Little Helper and taking a Klonopin or a Xanax or whatever. You know, some of those drugs are really good to treat anxiety, and under the direction of a medical doctor, you may be prescribed Klonopin twice a day at a low dose to treat anxiety. But when you start taking it because, like, as needed for stress and mixing it with alcohol, you know, you just have to be careful what you're doing because those are addictive drugs.
So, Dr. Haith, what's the best way for a woman to achieve and then maintain her optimal cardiovascular health?
I would say the following. I want women to know that it's their biggest risk of death. I want women to know that 80% of it can be prevented. And then knowing that, I want them to see their doctor every year, once a year, even if they feel fine, to have their risk factors assessed, whether that be smoking or heavy alcohol use, or diabetes, or high cholesterol. If you pay attention and go and get these things checked and get them controlled and pay attention to what they are and fixing them if they're not normal, you could change completely the outcome of your life, and it's totally preventable. So that, I think, you know, even though cancer fills everyone with fear because they think they're going to die, and heart disease doesn't seem appealing or interesting because, like, you might live with it for a long time. You can die. You're going to die too from that. And it can be a miserable death. So I want people to actually be afraid of it. Women, go and see their doctors, take themselves seriously, and start treating whatever they have now so that when they're 70, they don't have a massive heart attack.
I think that those are just such wise words. And I'd add one little frosting on this, you know, interesting cake, and that is stress. Girlfriends, you're stressed out.
Oh, right.
And,
100%.
You know, it's like, come on. And you could have a great lipid profile and all the rest of it, but if you're stressed out of your brains, not getting any sleep, and walking around, you know, with wall-to-wall anxiety, well, Dr. Haith, what's that doing to their heart?
It's doing horrible things. We know that stress causes heart attack and cause heart failure syndrome. Same with depression and anxiety. And whether you need to go out and start an exercise program or meet your friends or start meditation or take a stretching class or whatever it is you need to do, as long as it's not becoming an alcoholic and smoking marijuana all day long, that makes me happy. Just do whatever you need to
all
do
right
to feel good, with the exception of substances.
All right. And just get some flipping joy out there, will you, for crying out loud? Oh, my gosh. We have been talking to our wonderful go-to cardiologist, Dr. Jennifer Haith. And I just can't begin to thank you enough for being on the Herb Podcast again to be able to help, you know, clarify the confusion out there about how best a woman can really address issues of her heart health, especially today, as we talked about drug and alcohol abuse. Dr. Haith, thank you so much for being on the HERB podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Always, and we can't wait for the next one, too. All right, everybody out there, this is your second reminder to run on over now to iTunes and rate and review this show because it was that good. Yeah. And I'm going to be sitting here waiting to hear from you. Why? Because, well, I'm Dr. Pam Peake, host of the HERB podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peake or Twitter at Pam Peake MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the HERB podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and please stay well.